Ott van még Nikolić. Négo felé. Négo helyzetben. Gól! Gól! Négo kiegyenlít. Bravo Loik, bravo Lolikám, Lajos, szép gól volt. Sallai. Azon mellett még el tudjuk hozni. Sőt, Szoboszlai kap labdát. Szoboszlai előtte, Nikolić ment középütt, Könyves. Szoboszlai. Könyves szép helyet csinált neki. Szoboszlai lő. Gól! Gól! Hát ez ott van! Milyen hosszabbítás! Semmilyen! Semmilyen! Le kell fújni! EB-re kell menni! Nem is kell menni sehova! Itthon kell maradni! Maradj otthon! A Puskás stadionban jövőre! Szoboszlai góljával 2-1!
Hi guys, and welcome to another edition of the Hungarian Football Podcast. And joining us this week is a special guest. We've got Kevin McCluskey, who's a regular on Celtic podcasts, such as A Celtic State of Mind. Also runs the fantastic Hungary MB2 Twitter account, which covers the Hungarian second division. So he knows his stuff, and he's the perfect guy to be here this week. With Friday playing in Celtic for this week's Europa League matchup. Kev, welcome to the show.
Cheers, Gabby. Thanks very much for having me.
It's a pleasure, sir. It's a pleasure. And also, now, Tom, where do I start with Tom? Now, Guardian, Joe, this guy's just everywhere now. He's literally the James Corden of Hungarian football. It's Thomas Mortimer, ladies and gentlemen, as always.
Hello, and I welcome the abuse that will follow after this podcast, seeing as it's following me everywhere else at the moment.
We'll try and keep this one pretty much under the radar, Tom, if we can, because like you say, it's just been a torrent of abuse for Hungarian football, which is slowly going away as we're a bit of an afterthought now, until we draw England in the Nations League, of course. Gents, let's start with Hungary's two completely different performances in a space of a few days. First up, it was Albania who were the visitors to Budapest. Obviously, the game was played behind closed doors. Did that affect the team? I'm not sure. Tom, what do you think? Why was it so bad?
Yeah, I've almost kind of forgotten about that game because of how bad it was. But I think to be realistic for a second, I think it's just two even teams. And we just happened to end up on the worst side of it. I mean, I don't think you could begrudge Albania getting the win that game. I don't think you could begrudge them getting the win in their home game as well in the first time we played them. I just think, yeah, when we've been up against them twice in a row and we've not looked like the better side. I know we have performed poorly and we expect to play better against a team like Albania, but I think Bensa was right when we were talking about this in the preview that maybe we just underestimate them a little bit and maybe they are a lot better than we give them credit for. But like you say, it was still very bad. Like, I think we really, really do struggle when a team basically does to us what we like to do to the bigger sides and sit back and counterattack. We look very open when we are being countered. Our midfield are just not good enough at shuttling into the spaces to close down those transitions. And when we have the ball, we just don't look like we're ever going to really take the game to another and like incisely cut through the opposition. And it was really frustrating because we have a lot of talented footballers in that side. We Adam Nagy, Loic Nego, who played awesome against England, Szoboszlai, Roland Szalai, Daniel Szalai, who's been awesome at SKC, and they all, I mean, I can't think of anyone who played well in that game at all. They just kind of just look like players just like almost like when you kind of just throw a dice playing Yahtzee and see what comes up, and we were rolling ones all game, like just like we were in the away tie against Albania. It's just, however good Rossi is against the bad teams, he's equally Sorry, against the good teams, he's equally as bad against the poorer teams, the weaker teams in Europe. Because, I mean, we've seen it this time and time again. We just can't take a game to the opposition. If someone takes the game to us, we're fantastic. But if we've got a bit on the front foot, we just can't do it. And it's really quite a worry, to be honest. And we're kind of just lucky that the England game happened, because it makes everyone forget about the Albania game. Because like I say, I kind of forgot about it, put it to the back of my mind. But now we think about it again, it was a thoroughly depressing night.
And to be fair, it was an absolute worldie of a goal. All right, you can look at the defending, and you know, Salah got turned inside out by this guy, but he was trending on Twitter at one point throughout the world for scoring that goal, because he was just, it was absolutely incredible. And like Benson said, he was right. You know, they've got a lot of Premier League talent in that squad as well. And yeah, we are, like I say, guilty of underestimating them for sure. Kev, looking at when we previewed these games, we looked at the squad that we picked, and especially up front, we were sort of in awe at the attacking options that we have. Rossi intimated recently after the England performance that, reflecting on that Albania game, that, you know, it's one where we should have gone more attacking, and you know, etc. What would have been your ideal front three against Albania?
I think probably the three that he's gone with is the three that was the best front three that were available for the game. Shalai, Szoboszlai playing, you know, behind him, and Shalai up front. I think that was that's the best three that were available for the game. On paper, I think it was a good front three. They just didn't click. It just didn't happen for them. I've been really impressed by Shalloy, and I hope I've got the pronunciation correct. He's been on fire for, I think, Kansas City out there in the US, but he seems to have struggled a bit at international level. I think that's a kind of a common theme or a common occurrence at the moment with some of the players. They're doing really well domestically, or yeah, in the domestic games, but when it comes to international level, they're just not quite able to raise the game. And I think, as Tom said as well, Hungary's setup is perfect for playing against the big teams, but when they become the big team, or the team that has to take the game to the opposition, they struggle. And I think that's probably the biggest issue against Albania.
Very right as well. Let's sweep Albania under the carpet, basically, lads. I think, you know, we've had two bad results against them. Next up was England at Wembley. I think we all had it down as an absolute spanking. 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0. You could have picked any number, and you know, we were all expecting that to happen. Tom, you and I were lucky enough to be there. It was an absolutely incredible day. What a difference, Tom. Looking back on it, England that bad or Hungary so good?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I was talking to my parents about this the other day, and they were watching on TV, on English TV back at home. And they were saying, I think the presenter, Mark Pugach, kept saying over and over again, England have been really poor tonight. But apparently the pundits on ITV were saying kind of the opposite. They were saying, yeah, Hungary and England have been a bit below par, but I think they were giving a lot of credit to Hungary, and that was Roy Keane, Ennio Luco, and the other one escapes me. But they were giving a lot of credit to Hungary, and I think it was right. I think it was a bit of both. Like, I think we probably caught England on a bad day. I imagine they probably expected to roll over Hungary just like they rolled over them at the Puskás Arena, and they'd just, yeah, collapse in maybe in the second half when they got a little bit tired. But it was the opposite. And I remember even saying on Twitter with about 10 minutes to go, like, this game could go either way, because we didn't have any big, huge chances. You couldn't say, oh, we should have put that one away or should have put that one away. Whereas England probably did have a couple like that. Harry Kane spurned one miles wide, and Raheem Sterling had a one-on-one, which he should have done better with. But they were very few and far between, the big chances for England. And England, against England, you're going to have to ride your luck a couple of times against big nations like that to come away with a result, especially at Wembley. But I thought Hungary were awesome. Like, to a man, they were fantastic. Loic Nago, the standout for me, was just absolutely, I mean, I kept saying to you and we kept saying to each other that, like, just look at him. Like, he was playing almost like a right winger when we had the ball. And then as soon as we lost it, he was back on Grealish. And I played against someone like Grealish who, there's not many players in world football, and I don't think I'm being hyperbolic by saying this, there's not many players in world football who are better at beating a man than Jack Grealish. Maybe he doesn't have a tactical discipline and his final ball isn't always there, Jack Grealish. But, like, genuinely, in world football, there aren't many better players at taking on a man. You think in Mbappe, you think in Lionel Messi, levels of player who are above him, because he just drifts past players so easily, and that's in the Premier League. And he did it less than two or three times past Loic Nago, and I think that's probably being a bit harsh on Loic Nago. Maybe he didn't even do it that many times. He was just immense on that right hand side. But like I say, everyone played well. I think, you maybe want a bit more from Szoboszlai going forward, but, like, he did his defensive duties and he worked hard and he did play nice passes. And I thought Andros Schäfer was probably one of the standouts as well for Hungary. I thought he was immense. Adam Nagy was such a crucial player to have back in that game, who missed the game in Hungary. He was a huge loss in that game. And today, and on Tuesday night, he just stepped up and bossed it and was the beast we know him to be. It was an amazing performance, amazing night. With a back five, you kind of see that back five on paper. Zoltnage, Attila Szalai, who's obviously awesome, Adam Long, who has been derided by Hungarian fans for ages, Akos Kecskes, who hasn't really played that well for Hungary in the past, and then Loic Nago. And just on paper, that back five made me very concerned before the game. But to marshal Jack Grealish, Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling like that, like they did, and big ups to Schäfer and Nodge helping out as well. Just immense performance. It's the first time that England, Hungary, have been able to get anything from England since 1953 when we beat them 6-3.
I haven't heard much about that 6-3 game, Tom. We must sit down and talk about that one day. You must tell me all about it.
I think there's a couple of, Pushkash, someone, I think a name, something like that, was playing, or some, I don't know, some Pushkash. I think it's Pushkash.
A strange name, very strange name. Sounds like the sort of guy who'd have a great goal competition named after him or something like that. But yeah, I'll look out for him, Tom, for sure. Nigo, interesting point with Nigo, that despite marshalling Grealish so well, like you said, he was everywhere as well. So not only did he have one eye on Grealish, the next minute he's on the line. The next, just an absolutely... I'm gonna go on a limb here and say that I think Nigo's performance against England ranks in probably top three of Hungarian player performances in any game over the last 10 years for me, without a shadow of doubt. It was just absolutely incredible. And like you say, that defence was laughable before the game. And when we were going in, Tom, and I was reading out the lineup, we all kind of sat and thought, oh my God. Goodness, what is going on here? We're really, really in for it. But it's a real sort of coming of age for everyone. I just couldn't have been better.
And don't forget, Loic Nago actually won us the penalty as well. So, even to kind of get us the goal and everything, yeah, it was just immense.
Yeah, and so, Kev, from what you saw of the game, obviously we know that you've got your accent kind of gives it away a bit, that you was obviously watching the Scotland game with one eye firmly on Hungary, of course. What did you make of them, Kev? Let's say we're all expecting this hide into nothing and out they pop. What was your thoughts on it?
Probably mirroring Tom's quite a lot. So when you looked at the team sheets before the game and the kind of the attacking players that England were putting out there, I'm looking at the team again just now. You've got Phil Foden in there, who's one of the top players in the Premiership at the moment. You've got Mason Mount, who's performing week in, week out for Chelsea. Sterling, Kane, Grealish. That's a front five that would put the fear into almost any defence in European or world football at the moment. And what was it, 4-0 at the Puskás just a few weeks beforehand. So, yeah, kind of thinking that this is going to be a kind of just a rerun of that. England would run amok. But Hungary were excellent. Every single one of them, every time I was flicking back between the games, it was all action. Every one of them seemed to be covering the ground. They were closing the English players down, weren't giving them any time or space in the ball. When England did get the chances, they didn't take them, and that was kind of the rub of the green that Hungary deserved, I thought, from what I could see from the performances that they were putting in. Nagel was everywhere, as you both mentioned. He was just all action, attacking 1 minute, winning the penalty, clearing it off the line the next minute at the other end. He was superb. So, it was like going back to the Euros again, and that kind of performance where it's nothing's expected of Hungary, and that's when they're at their best, I think. It's similar to the other game I was watching of Scotland. Scotland struggle when they're supposed to be the favourites for a game, as do Hungary. But when the backs are against the wall, they rise to it massively, and totally deserve the point.
Absolutely. It's interesting. On my journey home from Wembley, I listened to Talk Sport, and it was Jason Cundy and Darren Ambrose, who were nothing but complimentary towards Hungary. And this was to a backdrop of England fans ringing up one after the other, saying that Gareth Southgate had to be sacked after that performance. It was just fantastic to listen to. It's like music to my ears, and it made the whole journey absolutely fly through seamlessly. Tom, now, unfortunately, it's raised its head again, the issues with our fans. Although, let me say that all reports that I have seen from various outlets, I was just reading one today, actually, from Zoli Kirai, who's an editor of a website, Slovakian-based website, that covers in Hungarian language. The editor was in the away end and did his minute by minute of what was going on. And he pointed out that out of the 800 odd sold, about half of them were sold to Polish fans, who obviously, because of the brotherhood with Hungary, wanted to come along and wanted to be with their Hungarian friends and obviously cause trouble. Now, what seemed to spark it off was one of the Polish guys, an elderly gentleman, allegedly made a racist comment to one of the stewards. He was then, you know, rightly so, removed from the stand, which the other Polish guys there didn't take kindly to that and decided to pile in. And we all saw what happened in the aftermath. Clearly, photos, close-up photos, back it up. That there were Polish hooligans that were largely responsible for this. There was no doubt Hungarians that lumped in again. But Tom, we didn't hear. The Hungarians didn't boo the national anthem, there was the anti-knee banner that we saw. But we got absolutely dog's abuse in the press the next day. Hungarian thugs, Hungarian racists, everyone kind of like, and it became apparent quite early through social media that about the Polish involvement. But everyone seemed to kind of look over that, Tom, and just go with the narrative that had gone from Budapest to London.
Yeah, I was on Five Live the next day, and they basically asked me that question like straight away, like, why are the Carpathian Brigade so bad, blah blah blah. And I basically said straight away, I was like, this wasn't even the Carpathian Brigade. This wasn't. They didn't even travel to this game. Like, maybe like a few hangers on might have gone to this game, but this wasn't them. That this was mostly caused by Polish hooligans. And when I said that, they were kind of taken aback and they didn't really know what to say next, because they'd obviously planned their whole kind of spiel about the Carpathian Brigade. But I think it does. I think I know, like, directly, it probably wasn't the Hungarians, like you say, who were involved maybe at all. I'm sure, like you say, there's probably a few that were, and this was mostly Polish. But I think it goes more to the fact that this kind of goes wide to a more indirect on why the problem, I think, with Hungarian fandom at the moment is because the reason why those Polish fans are there, they're not strictly, but they're kind of there to back up their Hungarian fans. They're in a way to be there for fighting, they're there for muscle. And I think it kind of is, yeah, like I say, a wide problem that Hungarian away fandom has become this thing. It's kind of become like a macho muscle thing where they are going to a certain percentage of them are going to cause trouble. And like Polish fans haven't been going to Hungarian games for the past 30 years. It's actually quite a recent thing that this brotherhood has. Obviously the brotherhood goes back centuries and centuries, but it's very much becoming more and more of a thing as the years go by, as the governments become closer and the ultra groups become closer. And I think it just comes to a wider problem that these Polish fans are even bothering going to this game, because they want a little bit of a scrap. They're kind of there for that. And yeah, sure, that maybe they feel that they were provoked by the police to cause this ruckus and to cause this huge problem. But I think they're probably looking for any excuse. And I think this is kind of what the problem has become of Hungarian fandom, because the last time Hungary played at Wembley, like, there wasn't this kind of away crowd at all. And you go to a lot of away games and there wasn't this kind of antipathy and aggressiveness at a lot of Hungarian away games down the years, but it's getting worse and worse. And like we say, it's not the Carpathian Brigade, they had nothing to do with it this time. But I think there's a lot of people out there who go to games now who are kind of wanting to pretend like they're part of the Carpathian game, to pretend to be macho, to pretend to be this muscle, to get involved in scraps where they can, because that is unfortunately what an away fan is kind of becoming. Whereas it hasn't always been the way down the years. Like it's important to remember that, like, a lot of away games used to just be fun little jaunts for Hungarians. Obviously there'd be the big chanting and coordinated chanting and all that kind of thing. But I go back to some of the away games I've been to, Holland, Estonia. Bucharest was obviously a little bit different. Northern Ireland, Wales, like there's loads down the years that I've been to, and there was never this kind of aggressiveness. And whereas I feel it's becoming more and more of a thing, and I guess because it was England as well, like there is kind of this kind of perception of England fans, which goes back decades and which is well out of date almost these days, that these guys are only there for a fight. And there is a certain percentage of England fans that are exactly the same in away games. You saw them, what it was like in Amsterdam a few years ago, absolute chaos they caused. And England fans are obviously no innocent party themselves. But yeah, I think it has become a wider problem away from the Carpathian Brigade, that the people are just wanting to become a nuisance almost.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going back many, many years that we used to sort of be tweeting pictures that would be coming in from different countries like Austria and places where, you know, Friday fans have got big connections and things like that. And their banners used to appear in with them and everything like that. But it didn't seem to have the backdrop of trouble with it. Like you say, which comes along nowadays. It's almost sort of Millwall-esque, isn't it? Where they're thriving on the reputation at the moment, and that's going to get ultras from other countries, like you say, hanging on to it, because they're Russia was the big thing, wasn't it, for the Euros and the trouble that went on there, which has now kind of like pretty much gone away from their they're out of the limelight, and we just seem to be that current team in that spot at the minute. Kev,
and you saw it we saw it in Slovakia as well. I don't know if you guys saw that yesterday. It all kicked off between Spartak Trnava and Slovan Bratislava fans, and that was mostly caused by Austria Vienna, some Polish fans, and people just going to the game to be part of this coordinated violence. And it's 100% not exclusive to Hungary. It's just the spotlight's on Hungary at the moment, because they're the ones who were doing it on the main stage. But yeah, that Slovakian thing yesterday, which caused an absolute chaos, is European wide. Let's not get it wrong.
I know, and you know, those that think football hooliganism had gone away, even from English grounds, and that are very much deluded, because you'll find an incident at every single ground up and down the country, every single game that goes on. Kev, you're a regular at games in Hungary, albeit second division level. I know you get to go to first division games as well. Have you found the atmosphere changing as a backdrop to what the national team hooligans have been up to?
So most of the games that I go to, actually, it tends to be, it's Vashash in the second division, and I've started to do quite a bit of ground hopping around the grounds of Budapest. So I've been to quite a few of the third division grounds. So at those grounds, it's low attendance. People are just there to watch the game, and there's not really any hassle or any troubles. But yeah, when you get to the first division games, NB1 games, I've generally found that the atmosphere has been, it's been fine, it's been friendly. I have an ignorance of not fully understanding the language. So I know the naughty words, I know when the bad songs are being sung, but I can kind of zone them out a little bit. But I've always found that it's always been welcoming at any ground I've ever been to, and the atmosphere's been pretty safe. So I haven't, in all honesty, seen a rise in any sort of unwanted behaviour at the games. But that being said, I think when you go to the bigger grounds, and probably Ferencvaros being the one, you do see more of the flags and more of the banners there, with sort of the right wing slogans on them, that we don't want to be seen at football, but they're slowly creeping back in, probably more at that side of things. But as I say, on the whole, I actually find going to the football here a very enjoyable experience, and I haven't ever felt uncomfortable at a game in Hungary.
That's encouraging to hear, Kev. That experience is probably a little bit different to what Tom and I have seen, over the years, at Honved, at Friday. You'd hope times are changing, and you know that they will move forward. But you just can't help but wonder that the fact that the national team, the Carpathian Brigade, and guys are in the limelight, that you'll get the guys at club level that will want to replicate that and give Hungary this fearful name throughout Europe, kind of thing. But
yeah, I do think there is that element probably creeping back in a little bit more, if I'm being totally honest with you. And Tom's probably hit the nail on the head, that a lot of it, I think, it's a bit of a kind of peacocking and fronting a little bit. They want to be seen to be the hard men. Whether they actually are or not is a different thing, but as I say, yeah, you can see there's a small increase in sort of the right wing chanting or the right wing banners at games, but still, as I say, on the whole, it's an enjoyable place to watch football.
Yeah, and I think it's important to like point out that it's only a few certain clubs who are the kind of the bad baddies here, I guess. Like, it's a very small percentage of like Ferencváros fans, and they've done a very good job at kicking most of their racists. Well, maybe they haven't kicked the racists out, but the racists have been a lot quieter than they used to be. Budapest have been very bad over the last 4 years. Like there was one in 2017 where 250 separate chants were sang at a single game from Budapest. ZTE not been good down the years. Holodosh were very bad, especially when the Black Lives Matter stuff came back. Honved, as we've seen countless times, we've seen stewards bloody wear having white power tattoos at those games. Like, there's a certain number of clubs, but like Kevin says, on the whole, it is a very enjoyable experience, and it's not. And I don't want to kind of give the impression that it isn't. it's just a few certain clubs who kind of need to rid themselves. And I think the problem is that it's not really a football thing. It's a society thing. Like, you can't to stop racism and at football games and expect it to disappear into the ether. It's not how it works. It's not how life works. It's a societal problem which needs fixing.
Yeah, and it's baffling that, you know, Friday can unveil an Aryan Greens flag and then go on to celebrate Somalia. You know, players from Morocco, players from all different kind of races that now play for Friday and score goals for them and you know, make them jump for joy and make their whole weekends enjoyable, and yet they unfold flags like that. It's like, what do you want, guys? What do you want? It's just absolutely baffling. But I guess that's the mentality of people who think like that.
Exactly, yeah. Racists aren't very smart people, are they, really?
No.
Because, yeah, you kind of have to be stupid to be a racist.
Good words, Tom, good words.
Zsindul Szalai, és vissza lehet tenni Klein Heslenek, és újra Szalainak, és ott a gólhelyzet, és a gól, és a gól! Szalai vezet Magyarország! 550 nap után be lehet azt piszkálni, pöckölni, tuckolni! Egy ide! És micsoda támadás volt!
Let's move on, guys, to Friday, and let's get onto the footballing reasons. They face Celtic again in the group stage this time, and that will be in Glasgow on Tuesday with a very bizarre 3:30 p.m. kickoff. Kev, firstly, why are we kicking off at 3:30?
Right. I believe the reason for this is it's the COP26 climate change conference is taking place in Glasgow this week. And we also have Celtic and Rangers were both drawn to play at home in Europa League games on Thursday. So both teams couldn't play at the same time in Glasgow. And apparently that's not a very safe thing to do in that part of the world. So one game had to move and Celtic drew the short straw.
Okay, so I mean that's clearly had it's going to have a massive effect on the attendance, because it's kind of schools chucking out time. I think officially it's a little over 300 that are going to travel from Budapest. Whether that is due to the time or whether that is COVID or whatever, I'm not entirely sure of. What do you think the attendance is likely to be for it, Kev?
I think it'll be pretty low. I don't think there'd be much more than 20,000 at this game. I know quite a few people that are taking days off work and pulling the kids out of school early so that they can get to go. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be low. I think it'll be Celtic's it's a 60,000 seat stadium. It'll be a third full, I would imagine.
It's sad, isn't it? Because football, European football under the lights, in fact, football under the lights anywhere is pretty special. But to play in a special place like Celtic Park, you know, Adam Bogdan has already come out and said that, you know, he can't believe that he's been at a great stadium like Wembley and he's going to be another fantastic stadium. But like I say, to have the voices that are going to be echoing around it is going to be pretty dreadful. But hey, climate change. What can you do, guys? Moving on to the game, Kev, we'll stick with you for a moment. So, obviously, it's well documented and well known what happened the last two these guys met. Friday went off to play in the Champions League, and Celtic went off into a bit of obscurity. What's different this time around? What can Friday expect from this Celtic team?
Oof, this Celtic team is completely different to the one that played last season. I was actually reading an article not long before I came on where it's basically saying Callum McGregor will be the only player that started last August against Ferencvaros that should start tomorrow. The team's completely changed in the last 14 months or so since that game. New manager in place, Ange Postecoglou. He's trying to play a quite an expansive style of football. It's very open, very attacking. His philosophy is just to kind of, it's all out attack, basically. If Celtic found themselves 4-0 up with a minute to go, he'd want them chasing the fifth. Likewise, if we're 1-0 up with a minute to go, he wants Celtic chasing the second goal. He's not bothered so much about leaving the space at the back, which is a concern at times from a Celtic point of view. But yeah, we'll see a very different Celtic, one that will actually really try and take the game to Ferencváros this time, and one that will give them the respect that they deserve and that they didn't get last time.
Tom, it's also quite an interesting season for Ferencváros so far, albeit they're second in the league with a game in hand on Kishvarda, who they have lost at home to, along with Salaegerje, quite unsurprising. I think the jury's still out on Stoger as to what this team's doing this season. You'd think their squad would be good enough, though, Tom, to be able to compete in MV1, like wipe the floor with everyone, and still focus on their European games. But it seems to be like he's making a lot of changes ahead of these European fixtures.
Yeah, I mean, you'd expect Frodi's second team to be more than good enough to win the league. Like you take every 11 the 11 players out of the team that play the Celtic game tomorrow night, and the next 11. You would back them to win the league, wouldn't you? If that was just the squad, the next 11, and then a few more subs, I would back them to win the league because it's so good. You just think of the attacking players, for example. Like Topmak didn't even play against Betis last time out in the Europa League. It was Uzuni, Zachariasen, and Ryan May up top. Like Frank Bolly's not in the Europa League squad. Ahmed Besic isn't in the Europa League squad. Marco Marin's not in the Europa League squad. Like these are, well, all internationals with their team, like good internationals as well. I'm talking Ivory Coast, Bosnia and Germany. I know Marco Marin doesn't play for Germany anymore, but he did do in the past. Then you look at kind of the options in defence, even in goal, like with Adam Bogdan, second choice keeper, Hungary's third choice. Like it's just a team that's in an embarrassment of riches. So yeah, they should be beating ZT. Like, I don't think there's any excuse to losing that game against ZT at the weekend. Sure, you might have an eye on the game on Tuesday night, but you are more than good enough to win that game. It is interesting, isn't it? Like you say on the Stoger, like the jury is out a little bit. They have performed very well in Europe. We're a little bit unlucky not to make it through to the Champions League. I mean, they maybe should have done, because in that first game they were 1-0 up and had a penalty and were a man up and then ended up losing that game 3-2, which is kind of not unforgivable, but it's, if you wanted to be getting to the Champions League, you've got to be winning that game, really. That was against Young Boys. We've seen how good Young Boys have been in the Champions League so far, beating Man United. And in the two Europa League games so far, they've been decent as well. Like, I know they've lost both games, but ran both Leverkusen and Betis really close, were level for large periods of that game. And it's a different Frodi as well at the moment. Like when under Rebrov, they kind of played a lot of bunker football, like bunker footsy, like just sat men behind the ball and yeah, kind of hope for the best. That was what we kind of saw at Celtic Park last year. I know Celtic fans weren't particularly impressed by how they performed that day, but Dennis de Bush made some vital and heroic saves in that game, and Frodi kind of just sat behind the ball for the whole game and then won it on a counter-attack. Whereas what we've seen in Europe so far from them is a little bit more of an open style, and I guess that's maybe what Stoger wants from his side, to be a bit more attacking, to be a bit more open. I guess it does leave you a little bit vulnerable in defence, but they've kind of gone toe-to-toe with Leverkusen and Betis so far. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like tomorrow. It's annoying that it's obviously at 3:00 rather than Yeah, because well, Celtic Park on a European night is what legends have made of. Like, legends are made of. Like, it's like legendary. People talk about it all the time. Barcelona players say it was one of the best atmospheres they've ever experienced when Celtic beat them there. So it's a shame that we're not seeing that. But it's going to be a very interesting game, I think, either way.
Yeah, and it's funny how they're kind of contrasting in Europe, aren't they? There's that. I mean, as bad as Celtic have been, Kev, if you pardon me for saying, like, they've clearly not been up to the level that they have been, but they're still in the Europa League. A draw between these guys tomorrow, and that's pretty much it, done and dusted for the group. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't like that comment, Gabby, about Celtic not performing so far. Sorry. As true as it was.
I'm sorry.
I was actually at the Frodi Betis game, and I was very, very impressed by Frodi in that game. I think towards the end, Betis kind of showed their class and their ability to manage the game better, and that's what saw them through. But I felt the 3-1 score flattered Betis quite a bit. I think 2-1 would have been fine as a result. And I have noticed as well, as Tom was kind of alluding to, last season when Ferencváros went to Celtic Park, I thought they played a great game. They managed that game perfectly just by defending and sitting in and frustrating Celtic for the whole game, more or less. And I think that this Stoger's team is certainly a lot more open. They're giving away a lot more space in the flanks. I think they've lost something like 7 of their last 8 goals have come from not being able to defend cross balls, and that's an area where Celtic generally have a lot of success. And the new system is down the wings. They've got two young wingers, young guy Jota from Portugal on the left and Abada on the right, both very quick and direct players. So I think they could be really key for Celtic tomorrow if they go and win the game. But absolutely, this is the one that decides third place. I was on another podcast earlier on in the week, and there are other podcasts, Gabby. And my prediction on the game is that it's one of those games that both these teams are very evenly matched, and they've both got kind of very similar strengths and weaknesses, that if one scores first and early, they could run away with it. Likewise, if the other scores first and early, they could run away with it, or we're going to have a really close game. It's such an intriguing game. The two styles kind of been quite similar. Both coaches being more offensive and attack-minded. So, yeah, it's a rubbish kickoff time, but I'm still looking forward to it nonetheless. And I'll find a way to finish the working day early to watch it.
Kev, that is where you excel in life, my friend. So I fully expect you to be a Dreyer in hand, you'd have to have one in each hand, wouldn't you? Is it McEwen's in one and a Dreyer in the other? Would that be both camps?
It would be tenants, if anything.
As long as it's not a bottle of Bucky, you'll be all right, mate.
That's right. Far too early in the week for that. Although, come 6 o'clock tomorrow night, it might be a different story.
I was going to say, you've both been on podcasts this week. Obviously, been in high demand with people not knowing too much about Friday, other than the knocking them out of Europe previously. Tom, what's been like the most sort of insightful questions that you've been getting from the ones that you've been on with regards to Friday? What have they been sort of most wanting to know about?
I think Starmen. What style of football, and like you say, like alluding to last season, how much have they changed since then? And I think my answer to that is kind of, they've changed quite a lot. Like I say, they've also got a new coach, and they play a lot of different football, a lot different style of football. So they obviously don't know a lot about Ferencváros. Like, I think when a lot of teams a lot of teams fans see a Hungarian team in their group, they're probably a little bit happy because of Hungarian clubs past in European football, and it's not been great, as we know. But this Friday team are very, very different. I've been trying to bang that drum to people. I think I personally feel, and this may get disproven tomorrow, but I feel these two are very, very evenly matched sides. Like, you look at Friday's team on paper, like we say, it's fantastic, and it's just full of internationals, which is kind of unheard of at Hungarian level. And you just go through that team, like, Dennis De Busch in goal has played plenty of times for Hungary. Čivić at left back is a Bosnian international. Dvali, Georgian international. Andrej Bocka always plays for Hungary. Wingo, I don't think, plays for USA, but that was about it. At the back, Laidouni, Tunisia, Ryan May, Sami May, both played for Morocco. Like, I'm not going to go through every single player, but almost every single player in that squad, I think, apart from Zachariasen and Wingo, are not like internationals who play regularly. I don't think Zachariasen actually ever played for Norway. But I've been trying to bang that drum, really, that this isn't a team that Celtic should expect to roll over anymore. And especially as, I'm sorry, Kevin, in advance, that despite kind of Celtic's troubles, because of Celtic's troubles, I guess, over the last two years, they're not really the same team they were under Brendan Rodgers. And so I think the gap from what was once very wide, maybe going back 3 years ago, is very, very close now. And yeah, I've been trying to say that you guys might not have ever heard of Ferencváros before last season, or you might have heard of them because you play Football Manager or you've read some history book once, but they are a very, very good side. And yeah, don't be surprised if they do come and beat you at Celtic Park tomorrow. I don't think they will. I think it'll be 1-1, but I think it's a game that could go either way. And if any Celtic fan is going into this game thinking that they're going to roll over these guys after kind of being dumped out in payback or revenge for what happened last year, I'd be surprised if you did. No, I wouldn't be surprised if you beat them, but I'd be very surprised if you rolled them over 3 or 4-0, because I don't think many teams will do that to them.
Excellent, well, Tom.
That's exactly the message I've been trying to put across as well, Tom. That Ferencváros had a very, very strong team. And actually, according to Soccer Stand, Christopher Zachariasen has had one international cap this year.
Oh, there we go. See, everyone.
Everyone. That's the level that we're up against.
Star-studded Friday. Love it. Kev, now, taking you back to when you... I don't think you would have even been born, but every Celtic fan will know about it. And that is, of course, back in 1972, the European Cup versus Wipest. Has there been much talk about that, obviously, with Hungarian opposition coming to Scotland?
Not so much, no. The focus has really just been on this game and the game last season. And there's been the revenge game for Celtic. But no, there hasn't really been, not that I've been aware of anyway, any of the podcasts that I've been on or listened to, there's not been much chat about the previous games.
I think that's just down to my age.
But would you even remember that game?
No, I wasn't even born then. I'm very, very, very happy to say I wasn't. But I've met various Celtic fans, either in Budapest or wherever it be. And when you start talking and talk about my background with Hungarian football, they always mention Wipest. And obviously that famous game that they played. And I, you know, just wondered whether these guys knew that they were like Friday's biggest rivals and everything like that. But I'm guessing that's a pretty in-depth podcast you'd have had to go on to get to that stage of the barrel.
Quite like Hungarian football podcast.
That's the one, Tom. That's the
exactly. That's it. You don't get this in-depth talk anywhere
That's
else.
It, ladies and gentlemen, Tom will not be joining us for any more podcasts. We'll find someone to replace him. Guys, before we wrap up, I've got some questions from the people on Twitter. So apologies if we're going to go back to the national team guys again. Shout out to David, the aspiring bear, who's got a couple of questions. So I'll fire one at each to you. Kev, you can take this first one. Is Fiola still the best left-back option for Hungary?
For the time being, probably. I think what we do with, again, pronunciation time, Kicskis. Played there against England and played quite well, as everyone did. But I think probably, yeah, Fiola at the moment is the option, the best option. But I'll look to the future and go, you've got Milos Kerkez as well out at AC Milan, who seems to be doing bits and pieces for their Primavera team and getting a lot of good write-ups. So potentially he's one to fill that role in the future.
Yeah, no, good shout. We were watching the under-21 game. Tom had it on his laptop while we were eating some absolutely awful food served up at Wembley, I must say. Some phenomenal. We got hammered, but the ball for that goal, Tom, was just incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Kerkez has been... Like Kevin says, like he's been seemingly superb. I've not watched. I confess that I've let the team down here, and I haven't watched too much of AC Milan's Primavera side over the past few months. But I have seen him for the under-21s, and he does look really, really good. And any youngster to go to Milan has obviously got a lot about him, and that's hopefully where we can see that left wing back position, which is proven to be very difficult to find someone to play there. Like Zoltan, I just played pretty well there recently as well. But we want a long-term person to be there. And if it's not maybe Callum Styles, who we keep banging on about, and Rossi did talk up saying that we are considering him. Kerkez is going to be hopefully the man to fill in that role soon enough. But yeah, that under-21 performance, I don't know if anyone's seen the goals or anything, but treat yourself on YouTube, because some of them goals will make you laugh, and not in a good way.
Yeah, you're absolutely not wrong at all. I suggest if you put Benny Hill music on in the background and watch the goals, that will accompany it nicely. Tom, sticking with you, Zoli on Twitter, Zoltan Vargo, who asked, what was your impression of the new boy, Shaloy Vichai, who joined the squad in September and October?
Yeah, it's just to say with Vichai, because he didn't really play too much. He did fine. He did fine in the two. I think he came on in both games, didn't he? And fine. But like I say, he didn't really play enough to really make so much of an impression. I've been really impressed with him at Frodi, and I've been really surprisingly impressed by him at Frodi, because I just didn't think he was of that level, and I don't think Frodi hierarchy maybe did, because he's barely had a chance to prove himself for the first team until this season, until all the injuries came about. So hopefully we'll see more of him in the first team. And Shaloy, yeah, tough really. Like, I mean, we obviously love him on the show. We've had him on the show twice, and we keep bigging him up in Sporting Kansas City. We talked to Shane Tusoup, who's obviously been instrumental in then Shaloy's rejuvenation. But yeah, I think, and also Kevin kind of said earlier in the show, like he hasn't been able to, just didn't look at home, on the international stage like he does on domestic level. And I think it's just the difference in terms of quality, isn't it? Like, even someone like Albania, and like I keep saying, and like Benson said on the last show, like, we do underestimate Albania, and they are a very good side with a lot of players in top leagues around Europe. And the level, to be completely honest, is just not there in the MLS. Like, it's not a top league yet. It may well be very, very soon, but it isn't yet. And like, it has very, very good strikers in that league, but defensively, the players aren't very good. Like, usually the salary cap is spent on the forward players, the exciting players, the players who are going to get the fans through the door. So defenses aren't very good in MLS, and it is maybe like the 10th or 12th best league in the world, maybe even lower than that. And so for him to do it on MLS stage and be so impressive on there doesn't mean it's going to translate to the international, and it hasn't yet. It's very early to say that, or it's very early to write him off. I'm not going to do that. But it didn't really work for Nikolic when he played for the national team, when he was scoring all those goals at Chicago Fire. Yeah, sure, maybe Nikolic didn't get enough chances from the Burn Stoke, and that's completely fair as well. But I think, yeah, we just need to give Shalloway a bit of time to bed himself in before we can kind of jump to any conclusions. But from what we saw so far, it hasn't been great, but maybe we shouldn't expect it to be great straight away. And hopefully, and the problem is we want it to be great straight away because Szalai is coming to the end and he's got an injury at the moment, and we want someone to come out and replace him, and we want him to hit the ground running, and we won't go, yes, this is going to be our next centre forward for the next few years. But it hasn't happened yet. Andros Nemeth's a good person who we need to keep an eye on for the under-21s. He was awesome against Poland, scored 2 goals. He has picked up a knock, and he's maybe someone that might be able to carry the loads going forward up top, but he's only 18, so something to keep an eye on. But yeah, hopefully next time comes round and Shalloway gets a couple of chances, he'll put them away, because we all know he's got talent. It's just replicating that domestic form on the international stage.
Absolutely. And Zoli's next question, which I'll field to you, Kev. Now, just like this podcast and COVID, the only other thing that will not go away is where is Attila Szalai going to play next season? Every single other day, there's one team mentioned, Atletico Madrid or wherever it be, teams in England. It seems pretty likely that he won't stay at Fenerbahce as much as he loves it there and is loved there. He's turning into an absolute beast of a defender. His question is, Kev, where is he most likely to end up? What's your feelings on that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's a player that could have his pick of clubs probably over this summer. I'd probably like to see him move to Germany. I've just got a thing, I think, about German football. I love the league, I love the teams and the style of play. And I think when you see how well Willy Orban does in the German league, I think if you could get Szalai in there as well, up against some of the top strikers in Europe, playing against a Lewandowski and a Haaland, and the movement of the forwards in Germany, I think that would be a league that could really test him to his full capabilities. So I think that's where I'd like to see him go.
That's a good chat. What about you, Tom?
I've heard Atletico Madrid be mentioned, which would be really cool. I think anywhere with a defensive-minded coach, like a coach who knows how to defend, is where I'd kind of like him to go to be honest. We've seen like Arsenal be linked to him in the past, and I wouldn't want him to go there personally because, well, we kind of seen what happened to Ben White immediately. I mean, it's maybe a bit too early to judge how Ben White's playing, but he has, yeah, not felt at home at Arsenal since moving there. And I just think that if he goes to a team with a manager who doesn't know how to defend, then he may just get shown up a little bit. I think I always want Hungarian players to just go and play for a good manager, and that's there's plenty of them about. Don't go to Man United under Ole Solskjaer. Don't go to play for Neil Lennon if he's knocking him out. Probably isn't, is he? He's probably on Five Live. But yeah, basically choose a good manager. That's all I would say. Because if you want to develop, that's the best way to do it. You don't want to go and play for Ole Solskjaer. Not that he's going to go to Man United, but it's probably a good signing for him.
Well, do you think Solskjaer will still be there at the end of the season, Tom, is the main thing?
Well, he might not be there in 3 games' time, but look at Harry Maguire, Jesus. He's better than Maguire, isn't he?
Well, looking at him defending that that far post the other day, around, I think I would do a better job. I mean, that pretty much looks like me standing at a bus stop.
Yeah, just watching the buses go by. Oh,
just watching them go by and then I've missed it. typical.
I did that on the night of the Euro 2020 final. I had to walk all the way home and it was raining. Pathetic fallacy for anyone who can remember that from GCSE.
Brilliant. Guys, thank you so much for your input today. Kev, it's been absolutely brilliant to have you on the show. Now, we're definitely going to get you back during the winter break and we'll discuss everything Hungarian second division. And if that isn't niche, I don't know what is. Kev, been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, pleasure's been all mine. Thank you.
And Tom, been great. Guys, we keep threatening to do this football and politics and everything like that. And now it seems that Tom has pretty much upset every single person out there. We can probably get away with doing it now. So we'll be back very soon with the issues on the Carpathian Brigade and Hungary and politics and all of that. So stay tuned, guys. God, do we have to end on such a dull note? Let's bring it back up, guys. We drew 1-1 with England at Wembley. What more do you want from that? Haida Majorasag. Good night, everybody. Take care.
Stay safe and keep listening to the podcast.